Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we'll conclude a three-part conversation around the importance and power of team. Andy, I thought we'd start off this month by catching people up on the conversation, but before we do, why don't you remind the audience of why team is important to you?
Well, it's important to me in the context of our current conversation because, as I said last month, about a year ago, actually, I had several Sundays where I wasn't speaking. And so I just visited week after week our different Atlanta area campuses. And I was overwhelmed with the efficiency, the organization, the energy. And I just walked around thinking, you know, this is absolutely incredible. And then it dawned on me, I'm not sure why this works so well. And again, looking at our organization from the standpoint of staff meetings and then looking at volunteers, we have high-performance teams. We have extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. And again, hundreds and hundreds of volunteers. And anybody that's ever been a part of a large volunteer-driven organization, whether it's a church or a charity or whatever, when it works well, it's almost magical. And so I'm walking around, you know, watching all these people do all these incredible things with a smile on their face, and I'm thinking, I'm not sure why this works so well. So I spent some weeks asking lots of questions and trying to discover what's the secret sauce, what makes our high-performance teams work the way they do. And my goal was to extrapolate some principles or some transferable principles that I could come back around to our teams, our staff and volunteers, and say, hey, here's what you do and here's why you do it so well, and let's not lose sight of it. So the goal wasn't to solve a problem. The goal was to document why we do and how we do what we do in such a way that we could, again, teach our staff, teach our volunteers, and make sure the next generation of leaders who come into this organization do what we're doing so that we continue to do it well. As we've said in the past, leaders have a hard time stopping to analyze their own success. We love to read the success stories of other people, but we generally only do an autopsy around a problem or a failure. Right. And so I wanted to stop and evaluate our success and, again, create some terminology that I could come back to our staff and say, here's what makes great teams and here's what why our teams work so well, and let's not lose sight of that. So that's what began this conversation. Then I began to talk about this outside of our organization. People found it to be very helpful, a bit challenging. And so we decided to spend 3 months talking about it with our podcast listeners.
And the terminology you created led to this observation. High-performance teams are comprised of people with extraordinary clarity around what, why, and how, along with a strong predisposition towards execution.
Yeah, that's the summary. That was my summary observation. Mm-hmm. So then when it came to teaching this to our staff and creating transferable principles, I came up with three ideas or three imperatives to say, hey, if you're going to continue to create the kinds of teams you have, here are three things you need to continue to do. So the first one was to select performance-oriented people and then position them for maximum impact. Mm-hmm. You know, select performance-oriented people, position them for maximum impact. We talked about that 2 months ago. If you missed that podcast, you may want to go back. And then last month, we talked about the second segment of this, which was clarifying what and why, Whenever you find a great team, you're going to find extraordinary clarity around what are we doing, why are we doing it? What are we doing it, why are we doing it? And so today, we're going to come around that third part, the what, why, and how, and talk specifically about how. And when we say how, we're talking about how do we do it here? Whenever you find a great team, you'll find that they do things basically the same way every single time. This is how we do it here. And so today, we want to talk about that.
And that brings us to our third and final practice, orchestrate and evaluate everything.
Exactly. Orchestrate and evaluate everything. The term orchestrate is really about clarifying and then documenting answers to the question, how do we do it here? Or to clarify and document, this is how we do it here. Orchestrating essentially defines an organizational culture. If you're going to work here, if you're going to volunteer here, this is how we do it here.
And this idea is not original with us. I remember we actually adopted it from the Michael Gerber book, E-Myth.
Yeah. In fact, E-Myth Revisited, I think, was the first or second book that we read as a leadership team 18 years ago. Can you believe that?
It's hard to believe.
And what was so strange is when we read about orchestration, there were five of us sitting there with this you know, brand new organization, and he's telling us in the book, you need to document, this is how we do it here. And we're looking at each other thinking, We're not even sure how we do it here. We're not even sure what we're doing. But you know what? I remember Lane in those discussions early on. When we read his explanation and his description of orchestrating, we knew this was important. This was, I think, for leaders, there's just something intuitive you realize. In order to have a predictable environment, for customers to have a predictable experience, you've got to orchestrate. And he says orchestrate everything. So we took him as the expert, and we began the process of orchestrating everything.
Yeah, I remember when we worked through the org chart exercise that he told us. Remember that?
Yep. Yeah. And Michael Gerber suggests that when you begin an organization, you create an organizational chart that reflects how large you want your organization to ultimately be. That's the one you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So we decided, and this is a bit of a sidebar, that we wanted to have a really large church. So if you'll remember, we created an org chart for a giant church. And then he suggests you go in and you put somebody's initials in every single box. So we all had our initials in 15 or 20 boxes that represented employees and job descriptions. But we just did it by
worked.
The book. It worked. it did. And that's an extraordinary exercise for anybody who's beginning a new organization.
Okay, back to orchestration.
Yeah, and in his book, Michael Gerber defines orchestration as, he says that orchestration is the elimination of discretion or choice at the operating level of your business. That orchestration is the elimination of discretion or choice at the operating level of the organization.
Which sounds a bit like a fast food restaurant.
Well, a well-run fast food restaurant is a highly orchestrated environment. But then, so is an ER. Orchestration brings consistency and predictability to all an organization's processes and environments. And in any organization or any retail environment or whatever it might be that you've enjoyed, whether you recognized it or not, there was a high level of orchestration. There was a high level of predictability. If you, as a parent, if you rush your kids to the ER, you don't want the staff making it up as they go. You want them to go into a well-rehearsed, orchestrated routine. And if that routine results in the saving of your child's life or fixing whatever was broken, it feels very personal. And as a parent, it feels personal. You helped my child. But for the people in the ER, it wasn't personal. It was a routine that they'd rehearsed. It was a routine they'd been trained in. They did the same thing for your child that they did done for many children. But in that moment, it felt very personal.
Now, that's not very intuitive, though.
No, but here's the thing. In great organizations, there is a great deal of orchestration. All the processes have been thought through, practiced, and as we're going to discuss in a moment, evaluated. What we've learned over the years, Lane, as you know, is that just as Michael promised in the book, this orchestration really makes an organization feel more and not less personal.
We had our own experience with this recently.
Yeah. Some months ago, in the middle of my message one Sunday, the fire alarm went off. And what happens is in our system, the PA system goes off. So suddenly my mic turns off, the announcer comes on, the alarm comes on. And for those of you listening, you need to understand in our building on any given Sunday, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of children. We have hundreds of babies. Mm-hmm. And so you're sitting in church, all of a sudden the fire alarm comes on. And as a parent, the first thing you think about is not yourself. You think, hey, my baby's in this building. I got to get my baby. And so we ushered everybody out the side doors. All of our leaders and that were taking care of children immediately went into a rehearsed, orchestrated routine. Mm-hmm. All the parents went out, went around to the back. Every single parent had their baby handed back to them. Every single parent who had a toddler, was reunited with their toddler. Everybody got their kids back. Now, it was highly orchestrated, but for every single parent who went home with their healthy child, it was very personal. Mm-hmm. So, imagine a situation like that where we hadn't orchestrated it. Everybody just decide what you think you ought to do during a fire drill. It would have been mass chaos. So again, orchestrating everything leads to a more personal experience for everybody. And so when we think about team, part of a team is you've answered the question, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? And how do we do it here? And orchestration is how you define how do we do it here.
And on a high-performance team, then, there's no discretion or choice at the operating level of business.
Yeah, that's what Michael says.
So how do things get improved? I mean, to use our terminology, how do you make it better if you always do it the same way?
Well, that's why it's not simply orchestrate everything. It's orchestrate and evaluate everything.
Andy, the topic of evaluation isn't new to the podcast, but what's the connection between orchestrating and evaluating?
Well, to your point, without evaluation, orchestration can lead to outdated processes or even just bad organizational habits. So somewhere in every great organization, there's a group of people who's watching and evaluating the orchestrated events. So as technology changes, what's been orchestrated is updated. As culture changes, what's been orchestrated is updated. So you evaluate and you orchestrate everything. And when you have both of those dynamics in an organization, it just leads to far more effective teamwork.
But it has to be intentional, not haphazardly.
Exactly. Now, in our context, on a given weekend, we have about 8,000 or 9,000 children that check into one of our ministry environments, and they all check in the same way. There's no discretion among the volunteers. We don't say, hey, you check them in your way, and we'll check them in our way. But the way we check kids in now is different than the way we did it 5 or 6 years ago. But the changes came as a result of constant evaluation of what had been orchestrated. And again, there's a bit of a tension here, but great teams have embraced both dynamics. Orchestrate everything, then evaluate everything you've orchestrated.
So it's evaluation. That's what keeps orchestration from getting stale or outdated.
Exactly.
Now, you included the word everything. Do you really mean evaluate everything?
Yeah, I mean everything. Anything that's been orchestrated, any process, anything that people have been trained to do, even job descriptions, have to be evaluated. Otherwise, again, they get outdated. And when we talk about evaluation, we're talking about formal and systematic evaluation, which, you know, most great organizations have some, you know, formal way of doing that. But also there's just the informal evaluation. Two great questions that leaders should ask when it comes to evaluation is this. What's bothering you? We learned that from Bob Strickland, one of our leadership team members. He just introduced that question into our conversation. Hey, at the end of the meeting, at the end of the formal systematic evaluation, here's a great question. Hey, before we finish our time together, what's bothering you? Mm. Or, you know, what are you most concerned about? You know, what's going on that it hasn't shown up on an org, it hasn't shown up on a spreadsheet. It hasn't shown up in a formal evaluation. But as a leader, you just have a hunch. What's bothering you? What are you most concerned about? So there's the formal and the informal. And then in addition, Lane, and this may be another topic for another day, but leaders need to create a feedback loop that keeps them close to what we call critical events.
What do you mean by critical events?
Well, in every organization, there are a handful of critical events or exchanges or interactions that are critical to the success of the organization. In other words, everything that we do as an organization doesn't have equal importance. And whether it's retail, for-profit, not-for-profit, there are critical events that are absolutely critical to the success of that organization. And leaders over time get pushed further and further away from critical events. So whether it's somebody who's managing a department, a division, again, a branch, a franchise, an entire organization, as they move further and further away from the, in the trenches, critical events that determine the success of the organization, you have to create feedback loops to where you can continue to get the right information and timely information if you're going to actually be able to evaluate what's happening, whether it's processes or what's been orchestrated.
For example?
Well, okay. For example, in retail, the critical event may be the conversation between the people at checkout and the customer. Online support, it's probably the reason your calls are monitored for quality assurance, So every organization understands here's the critical event. Here's the thing that we've got to get this right consistently. So you've got to create feedback loops so that the people who are far away from those critical events get information to help them assure that what's happening is what's supposed to be happening. As I said, growth always distances a leader from the events that matter most. The larger your organization grows, the further away you're going to be from those the performances that matter most. We mentioned fast food chain. Well, imagine somebody who owns 25 or 30 franchises of a fast food chain. Think about how far away they are from the interaction between what's happening at the counter between the person that works for them and the customer. Well, somehow there's got to be a way for the leader to understand what's happening there. Otherwise, what's most important won't go as well as it should.
And Andy, one of the dynamics I think we've always seen is the bigger the organization gets, the more the information gets filtered as moves up to the top of the organization.
Exactly. Nobody wants to bring the boss bad news. And so it's easy. It's just easy to get, you know, to be distanced from what's happening. I tell you, a great example of this is Frank Blake. Frank Blake, CEO of Home Depot, and Home Depot is headquartered here in Atlanta, and I've gotten to know Frank. And I asked him one day, I said, what do you do? I mean, what do you do when you're in charge of or responsible for an organization as large as Home Depot? And here's what he said. He said, you know, the most important thing I do is I walk the floor of Home Depots. And I'm like, seriously? And so what he'll do from time to time, and he feels like this is something he should give even more of his time to, and I was shocked by this, to fly into a city, to put on that orange apron, and to walk the floor and to watch the interaction, to interact with customers, to interact with what's happening at, you know, at checkout, because he understands in this giant organization, he has been pushed so far from that event, but that's the critical event. What happens on the floor at a Home Depot is the critical event. So he essentially kind of bypasses the org chart in order to get real eyes, to get his eyes and ears on those exchanges. And that's what I'm talking about. In order for there to be evaluation of critical events, leaders have to find or create feedback loops that, again, in some ways and sometimes don't ignore what they get on a spreadsheet, but add to what they're, you know, reading. Because as you said, information oftentimes gets filtered. Not intentionally, it's just the nature of organizational life.
So I guess one of the most important questions we can ask then is, what are the mission critical events in our organization?
Yep.
Followed by, what can I do to ensure I'm getting the whole scoop?
And within the context of our conversation, the point of all this is to make sure that what we've orchestrated is working the way it's supposed to work and that we're doing things the best way that we possibly can.
So any tips on the best way for a leader to do this?
Well, the answer to that is going to be very organizational or industry specific. But I think the leaders that listen to our podcast are smart enough to figure that out. Once you decide, okay, I need to make sure I'm getting both the printed information and a sense of what's happening on the ground, I need to figure out how to make sure that our orchestrated processes are actually up to date. I think once a leader decides, I've got to do that, they can figure out how to do that. But here's a couple of things that we've done. I have weekly access to the people who are in charge of or responsible for our mission critical events. I don't manage those people day to day. They are not direct reports to me, but every single week I have a meeting with everybody that I feel carries the responsibility of our mission critical events. I want to get them all in a room, which in our case is possible. In many companies and many industries, that's not possible. But the fact that I can pull them all into a room on a weekly basis, I do. I want to hear from them. I mean, I looked at the numbers. I look at the trends. You know, I look at our dashboard. You know, we have a very sophisticated dashboard. But anytime I can sit down with somebody who carries the responsibility for a mission critical event, you just learn more. So in our system, I have created a meeting schedule that allows me to get that information. Again, that's not practical for everybody who's listening. But when it is possible, I think it's important.
Well, Andy, as we wrap up this 3-month conversation, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I'd like to close by simply restating the big idea for these 3 months, and it's simply this: that high performance teams are comprised of people with extraordinary clarity around what, as in what are we doing, why are we doing it, and how do we do it here? That's orchestration. So extraordinary clarity around what, why, and how, along with a strong predisposition toward execution. And I would say to all of our listeners, you know what? If you're working on a team or with a team and you love what's happening, then I would encourage you to do what I did, to walk around, to figure out why does this work so well, to do an autopsy on your success, because if you don't know why it's working when it's working, it's going to be very difficult to fix it when it breaks. If you have a secret sauce, if you have a recipe for success, discover what that is, document it, and then teach your staff, teach your team so you can continue to be successful in the what you feel like you've come together to accomplish.
Andy, thanks for taking this time with us today, and thank you to our audience as well for listening. To hear more from Andy on leadership, please visit andystanley.com.